It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So, started the show about an hour ago. Commending Hardy, who was on before us, does his golf program, followed by Hey, It's Hardy. So we don't have to hear the fellas anymore when we start up our show here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. And that, in of itself, is a gift. But Hardy was spending the 8 o'clock hour, 9 o'clock hour? 9 o'clock hour, mostly asking the question, what movie do you love that other people hate? Chris has been trying, racking his brain, trying to come up with.
I'm working real hard on this.
And you just said, as we were coming back here, Go. 1999's Go. Not going to make the cut. Because you got to always look at Rotten Tomatoes, too, to base this on and see what the people and the snobby critics are saying.
Okay, I might have one. Go ahead.
And the tomato meter has it at 91%. The people like Go, and the audience score is 78%. So overall, that's not a bad movie.
Okay, what about Euro Trip?
Euro Trip. Why, do I know this? This is 2004's Euro Trip. Oh boy. Oh, this might come.
Do I have a winner?
Yeah, I mean, definitely not seen
this.
I
will watch Euro Trip when it's on.
Oh, look at this cast. Jesus. Well, no wonder why a young Michelle Trachtenberg and Kristen Kreuk, whatever the hell her name is. Yeah, this has Gasper written all over it.
Also, this is the movie for people that have seen this that has the song with Matt Damon. Scotty doesn't know.
Oh, I definitely know this. The people like it. This would count.
Okay, does it count? Am I in?
This will count because the snobby critics hated it. It's at 47%, even though the audience likes it at 75%.
Yep.
The critics' consensus is that they did not like Euro Trip. I think Euro Trip might be your bad movie.
I have a winner. Euro Trip.
Yeah.
Scotty doesn't know, which is amazing, the whole song.
Oh, God. This looks
like Matt Damon.
This looks so mid-2000s. Look at some of these reviews, too. Just when you ever begin to wonder if it's going to get funny or if it's going to be merely desperate all the way through, it lifts off like a wobbly helicopter and somehow keeps flying.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a Gasper movie right there.
Yeah, Euro Trip. I 100% will watch Euro Trip. And then what's the horror movies about, like, the hunting club in Europe? Is it Hostel?
Yeah.
I'll watch those movies.
Yeah, all those murder porn movies from like the mid-2000s, they were all the same. Saw, Hostel.
I'll watch Hostel.
Ugh.
Turistas. I'll also watch Turistas. Does that count?
Yeah, that's another one of those. Oh, neat. You're cutting off another digit. Ugh.
Yeah.
Boy, these some of these reviews for Euro Trip. The story sucks. The actors suck. You'd think the cinematography would be better. A film set in Europe.
Yes, I have a winner.
There you go. There's your movie, Chris.
What about Road Trip? Where Euro Trip was clearly.
Oh, Road Trip's awesome.
Road Trip's
hilarious.
The whole Austin Boston thing.
Yeah, Road Trip
Breckenmeyer.
So that's a Todd Phillips movie too.
Amy Smart's in there.
Who ended up doing the Hangover movies? Yeah, Road Trip holds up. That's still really funny.
All right.
Definitely could not be made today. But, yeah, with a young DJ Qualls and Breckenmeyer. Sean William Scott and an adorable Amy Smart. That's a good movie.
All right, good.
All right, Matt in the car wants to talk about your Belichick column. Hopefully you've read it, Matt.
Let's go.
You're next here on Gasper and Murray.
Hey, guys. Love you guys. I didn't read the article.
Okay.
But I will say this. So
You know, we not to get too political, but, you know, our country is founded and based on meritocracy. And I totally agree that there's racism and vile evilness in all corners of the world, including the NFL. But there is a natural built-in consequences for these owners and general managers who allow their nasty biases to influencing their hiring process. So, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, nothing. I'm not assuming this with the Cleveland Browns. But
yeah, sure.
Just as an example, if you were to take a Freddie Kitchens over a Flores or a Tomlin or who have you, you know, the natural consequence is that your team sucks or at the very least is not as good as it could be. So the teams that do not have any, you know, hate in their hearts have a natural competitive advantage.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess what's interesting to me when we have the discussion sort of is I feel like it keeps getting framed when we talk about Belichick strictly in a football sense. And when I think about all these coaches that have made these statements, and maybe I'm naive, maybe they're all doing it in a self-serving manner so that, you know, their team knows that they support him or whatever, but I just feel like it's bigger. There are things that are bigger than sports and bigger than football. And I think that you can, for example, like I'll use Bruce Cassidy as an example. You know, he had the interview with Matt Porter. Check my Twitter. I tweeted it out, and I've tweeted out the Boston sports figures, some of them, the ones that are in coaching or upper management who have made comments about this. I didn't tweet out Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron as players, but obviously they've been very vocal. But like, what's in it for Bruce Cassidy? Like, I'm just going to be real. Like, it's the NHL. Like, you know, how many African-American players or African-Canadian players, how many black guys is he going to have on his team? And he just sort of came out and spoke his mind and said, you know, I support the cause. And it's not
because it was just as basic as like the right thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it, to me, it's not being like, I support Black Lives Matter. No, just saying, hey, I condemn systemic inequalities. I condemn racism in any form. I condemn injustice, just the basic boilerplate, hey, you know, racism bad statement. Just doesn't seem that hard, and I don't see what the downside of it, especially, and here's the thing, like, when you're Bill Belichick and you're so influential, anything you do is huge, and you might be changing the mind. Like, some of these people that really are just following you unfailingly, you might get them to reconsider their point of view on something just by putting out a you have a tremendous amount of influence, and I think he could impact a lot of people in a positive manner by putting out the most benign and boilerplate of statements.
I apologize for cracking up while you were just talking there, but I couldn't help it because as we're talking about bad movies prior to that, this is for all the bad of Twitter, and a lot of it's bad, most of it, but every once in a while, like I still like it for the comedy aspect of it. Occasionally it's like who's funnier faster and you get good recommendations. And as we've been talking about bad movies, at Real King of Cheap tweeted and said, "Sir, the Velocipastor on Amazon Prime is a 0 and a 10 at the same time. I implore you to watch. It's only 75 minutes." And I thought he wrote it incorrectly, meaning Velociraptor. Like, the,
yeah.
No, no, no. I'm watching this tonight. Velocipastor. After losing his parents, a priest travels to China, where he inherits a mysterious ability that allows him to turn into a dinosaur. At first horrified by this new power, a hooker convinces him to use it to fight crime and ninjas.
Oh, that sounds great. That's right up my alley.
Velocipastor. He's both a priest and a dinosaur. I've never needed a movie more. Velocipastor. Starring Alyssa Kempinski as Carol and Greg Cohan as Velocipastor. Oh, you beautiful sons of bitches. Thank you so much
you
for this recommendation.
I know we have to get back on the clock here, but do you remember, because we always love to talk about 80s nostalgia, do you remember the 80s cartoon where you had the guy who could turn into like a Camaro, like that was his power?
I mean, well, no, I was going to say it wasn't that the Transformers or GoBots.
Turbo Teen. Do you remember Turbo Teen?
I do not.
You don't remember Turbo Teen?
No.
Oh, Turbo Teen.
Turbo Teen.
Look it up.
Be sure to drink your Turbo Teen. Okay, all right, Velocipastor. I am making a note of that. I am watching that tonight. Jasmine, get ready. Tonight we're watching Velocipastor. This is where I just heard her say, "I'll be in bed." Back after this, there was one of the things that popped up in looking at you know what I needed to put in the headlines today.
Yes.
There was a baseball, or actually a hockey card related story I wanted to touch on because I used to be way into baseball cards. I don't know if you were when you were around, you know, because we're around the same age, both Gen X, Chris.
No, I'm a Zennial. I'm younger than you.
It's not a real word.
It is.
Back in the day when I was way into baseball cards, I mean, they really, there was, I got a lot of learning experiences from cards, but a Connor McDavid card went for probably more than you would have expected. I want to touch on that quickly when we come back here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5.
In these times of no sports, I like to think anything goes.
This is sort of sports related, so I wanted to bring it up because it caught my eye.
Go for it.
Connor McDavid, reading from Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy on ESPN. Connor McDavid just made a retired carpenter from San Diego more than $100,000 richer. McDavid's 2015-2016 Upper Deck The Cup rookie patch autograph card sold for the final bid of $113,000 and change yesterday in the Leland Spring Classic auction. And just before I go on with this, it's crazy to me. I used to be way, way into baseball cards. Were you, like, at all? Because we're kind
I was,
of...
Yeah, I was into baseball. I mean, not like a crazy collector in terms... But I had a lot of baseball cards. I would buy them. Actually, there was a point where I got really into basketball cards, and somewhere I have the original full set, the inaugural year of Skybox. I don't know if you remember that company.
Yeah. I think they were Canadian, I believe.
I don't remember, but I remember going, that was a big deal. So I was into cards, but not like you. Like, not like, oh, I have to go have Roger Clemens sign this card.
It was, oh yeah, no, Chris, I got life lessons from baseball cards and being a collector. Like, and I'm talking about 10, 11, 12-year-old me. Like, it turned me into I ended up being a crazy person, but I guess it started early. Like, and I'll get to that. But it's amazing to me that some of these cards are only 5, 6 years old, like this McDavid card, are worth this much money. And one of the things that, even though I'm not a collector anymore, I get irked by what is taken over the really all collectibles more than anything else, is that the grading system. Like, it used to be about, yeah, you have that card, and maybe you got it in a crappy condition, and maybe someday you'll be able to upgrade it. Like, I used to be way into like older rookie cards. I had a Nolan Ryan rookie card from, I think that was the 68 top set, and Tom Seaver card. Like, there was stuff that I had. I had the 84 Fleer update with the Clemens rookie and the Kirby Puckett rookie. And they, you know, that was in good condition. But if you had something in bad condition, eventually you would get there. But now it's all about the grading. And if it's not gem mint and a 9+, like, it's completely worthless. Like, that to me takes the fun out of it. And it's amazing to me that some of these cards that are only 5, 6 years old can be worth this much. Over $100,000 for a Connor McDavid from 5, 6 years ago. Crazy. So let's see. Other versions of the card valued at more than $50,000. This was a one-of-a-kind item. Out of a 99-card run, this card was number 97, which is McDavid's jersey number with the Oilers, and it comes with, like, a patch of the jersey and all this other kind of stuff. But it just, anytime these kind of stories pop up, Chris, it makes me think of, as I mentioned, how crazy cards used to make me and what certain cards taught me, and none more than anything else. Do you remember, even though you were kind of, sort of, dipping your toe into it back in the day when we were young, Gen Xers and all, do you remember the Billy Ripken F-face card? On
I vaguely remember. I've heard of this. Yes, this was like, yes,
1988 Fleer was maybe the most famous. There was a stretch there where, and it was all market manipulation by the card producers. It really was. You know, you can read about the 89 Upper Deck, the Griffey rookie that made every child around that time and collector nuts. The card was they ended up actually mass producing them, and then the people that worked at Upper Deck were hoarding them to raise the value. The whole thing was market manipulation. But this 88 Fleer Billy Ripken card, there was a stretch there in the late 80s where error cards were all the rage. Someone had put the F word with face on the knob of his bat. So the photo of him, for those that don't remember, he's holding the bat, and it's just him in like a portrait. And it says F-Face, Billy Ripken, you know, brother of Cal, the lesser Ripken, and he's F-Face. And there was all these permutations of errors. But when that card took over and, like, that became all the rage, and that's summer of 88, I went to I used to beg my parents to take me to those card shows, and it was one of those monster shows in Wilmington where they had all the players show up and you pay out the nose for the autographs. That Billy Ripken card was all the rage at that show. And they were selling the wax packs of the 88 Fleer cards, Chris, they normally go for like $1.50 or whatever it was. And it was like $20 for a pack. It introduced me to gambling. And, you know, as most of my right arm is an homage to my grandfather, who was a degenerate gambler, and I have that in my blood, too. It's like, oh, man, $20 and a chance. I might get that Billy Ripken card. But what are the odds? So I begged my dad. Can I get a couple of packs? And it's like, yep, spoiled fat Jimmy's going to get those packs.
Of course he is. And yes, of course he is.
And Chris, I got the card. I got it. And that card, again, all the buzz at that. So that's 88. I'm 12. People out of their minds. Out of their minds for the Billy Ripken F-face card. And I opened it in the middle of the card show and went like, ah! And I've never felt, it was the one time in my life where I got to feel all these, in my 43 years, Chris, it's the one time in my life where I got to feel like
a winner,
the hot girl at the prom.
Oh, yeah. Jim Murray. Everybody.
Everyone wanted that ass. Like, I opened up that pack. I got the Billy Ripken F-face card, and I was immediately surrounded. Like, you know, bees to a nest. It was insanity. And it was like being on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as well, because all of a sudden, I say I have the card. It's mint out of the pack, and it's 100, 200, 300. It gets to up around $500. Do you know what $500 is to a 12-year-old boy? And part of the fun for me with the cards, Chris, more than anything else, wasn't really just like having them. Some I wanted to keep and eventually, you know, upgrade like those old rookies. But I loved the wheeling and dealing. Oh, young, greasy Jimmy loved the, oh, you mean I can make a profit on this? Like money, 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 money. And it was the gambling aspect. Oh, it made me crazy. And I remember looking at my dad being like, when it got to 500, like, I sell this, right? And this is that time where parents were duped into thinking, like, you'll save these for college someday.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And the lesson I got,
my dad still thinks all my He-Man stuff's going to be worth something.
The lesson I got, I can't help but being intrigued by any of these stories, like this Connor McDavid rookie card story that sells for $100,000. I learned so much about life through collecting baseball cards when I was a kid. Because that Billy Ripken F-face card, what I learned was always sell high and trust your gut. Because I knew deep down, it's not going to get better than $500. You know what that thing's worth now? Like a buck and a half. It's completely worthless.
Okay.
Always trust your gut. That's the lesson I got from that Billy Ripken F-face card. It still sticks with me 30-some-odd years later. Sorry, Dad, if you're listening, I still hold it against you. Like, you should have let the kid sell. Like, oh, God, put that $500 in my hand, which I probably just would have turned into more useless cards. But, man, cash. Always go with the cash. Always, always sell high. Always trust your gut. This guy's spending over $100,000 on this stupid card. Sell these things. They're ultimately not going to be worth crap, especially in today's world where everything's going to end up worthless anyway, thanks to the COVID and continued hell that we all live in. All right, had to get that off my chest. It was one of those stories that stuck up to me. Want to go to Chris in Chicago. Wants to talk to Chris Gasper about his Bill Belichick column. Go ahead, Chris in Chicago. You're on for Chris Gasper. It's a meeting of Chris.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good morning.
Yes. Hey, Chris.
It's great to have you guys unfettered by Jones. It's such a nice way to start my day.
Jones is awesome. I love yesterday. I love the Dark Knight.
Yeah, it was a pleasure working
with you. That's the best.
So real quick, and I heard your interaction with that caller earlier, and I was about to cover my ears because I thought you were going to use some bad language. You were getting so heated, but I understand why you were getting heated, and I have read the article. And I think what people are missing is that you're saying that doesn't he, as someone who has a lot of influence, have a duty to say something? Now, I'll tell you, there is a different side to this, and doing what I do, and having been on calls with a lot of other of my peers or at major companies around the country, what's happening is there's a lot of backlash from major companies who've gone out, the first ones who went out and said, racism bad, Black Lives Matter, because what's happening is people are saying the words are hollow. So if Belichick did come out with something saying what we all think he should say,
sure,
it would be much more beneficial if Belichick established, say, a scholarship at a historically Black college or university. So there was an article I read that 600 African-American employees of the major public relations agencies and marketing agencies in the world wrote a letter, all signed this letter, complaining about the fact that their companies had come out saying the same kind of things we think Belichick should say, but they're getting passed over for promotions and they're seeing racism at their places of work. So while we do think it'd be good for him to say something, it's more important for him to do something.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, that's a fair point of view, and I understand. I just think, I mean, you mentioned John Elway. I'm just curious how many of the sports figures that have come out have said, you know, they've been almost universally panned for a hollow statement.
I mean, Elway's the one that comes to mind. Beyond that, I can't think of any other. I'm sure that some people have gotten their backs up about some, but I other than Elway, I can't.
So that's kind of my point.
Yeah.
So you can name me one guy. How many people have come out? How many coaches and
countless at this point?
I mean, it's scores of people at this point. And there's one guy that really got panned. So, look, I mean, look, whether he does it or not, ultimately, it's America. He doesn't have to do it. I'm just saying it would mean a lot to a lot of people. It would be impactful. It would be helpful. He is the face of Boston sports. And there are so many other, and I think the one part of this, I don't even want to call it an argument, discussion that's getting lost is, well, what about the other coaches? Bruce Cassidy, Brad Stevens, Bruce Arena. Now, we haven't heard from Renicky, but Sam Kennedy put something out. So what about those folks? Did they do the wrong thing?
No.
Is it okay for them to do what they
did?
And if
all those other dudes did, just in terms, and especially with how important sports is to the community and people in and around New England, it does look, it's a bad look that all those other guys did and he didn't. And
Patrice Bergeron, Dano Char, did they do the wrong thing?
Especially when Patrice Bergeron is like non-existent on social media and typically doesn't do any of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I it's a good point there. Coy in Plymouth, though, is just talking about old cards. I see you wanted to mention something. Go ahead, Coy, quickly.
Yeah, you're talking about, cards that have a little notoriety. Well, one that went viral like a year or two ago was I think it was Mark Jackson on the Knicks. He had the Menendez brothers are sitting courtside.
Yeah. Get out.
I went through my collection because I saw the picture online and I'm like, I remember seeing a picture with Mark Jackson dribbling a ball like that. I got two of them. Two of those ones. I'm not into the whole murder porn podcast thing, but it was quite a thrill when I found one in my collection.
Yeah.
Pretty much perfect condition.
Thanks, Coy. Yeah, I saw this go viral, like you said, about a year ago. Mark Jackson, then with the Knicks. This was, who was the producer of these particular cards? NBA Hoops? Sure enough, you Google this, the Menendez brothers, who murdered their parents, are sitting in the background while Mark Jackson's, passing the ball. But, behind his right shoulder are the Menendez brothers. Yeah, I don't know how much that thing is worth. That's certainly a piece of history there. 617-779-0985. The phone number, if you'd like to join the show, have some thoughts on Kyrie Irving, that whack job. We'll get to him next here on Gasper Murray.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
With the brand new iPhone SE for less.
This is Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, who really knows if the NBA will restart, given the health risk to athletes and as the coronavirus numbers are increasing by the hour, really, down in Florida, as they're going to try to get this thing underway in the bubble at Disney in Orlando. But if it is to come to fruition, Chris, Kyrie Irving has certainly done his best to throw a wrench into the plans. Shocker. It was around this time last week where we were discussing that he was on the Zoom call with some of the players. It felt like it was almost like the B to C level players, too. It's not like you had LeBron or Kawhi Leonard or Anthony Davis taking part. It's not the true superstars taking part of this call. This was like the Angela, it wasn't the front men. It was like the guitarists and the drummers, if you will, that were taking part in this call. But he's got, he's got some pull. He was voted in by his peers to take, he's one of the leaders, the Players Association. So his voice is going to be heard, even though he's hurt and not really going to be taking part. But what stood out to me, rather, was that he said something's fishy about playing in Orlando. And Kyrie, certainly a conspiracy theorist, I think that's I don't think that's much of a stretch to call him that. I wonder what he's getting at there. And when he says that the players should start their own league, I don't think it's, if this was a message coming from someone like Jaylen Brown or LeBron, or I'd be more willing to listen, but because it's Kyrie, I can't. I don't think it's coming from a good place. I think this is more about him trying to get clout to look like some kind of leader, which I don't think he is at all.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at Kyrie, I look at the statement that Avery Bradley put out where he really, I thought, very clearly, very eloquently sort of delineated some of the things that the players were concerned about and that they wanted. They wanted to see more opportunities for minorities in hiring in front office positions in the NBA. Mm-hmm. They were hoping that maybe more black vendors could work with NBA teams in the arenas. They wanted more of a commitment financially and vocally from ownership in terms of supporting racial equality and causes that advocate for that. I thought he did a really good job of sort of spelling out what they wanted, whereas I thought Kyrie's thing was just pseudo-intellectual psychobabble. Like, you know, I literally was like, I think your heart's in the right place, Kyrie, and I appreciate that, but what are you talking about, and what is it you're advocating for, and what is it that you want? Like when he says, quote, "We are truly at an inflection point in history where as a collective community," and I'm ascribing this to him, and in fairness, this was sort of the statement that was put out by the coalition of players, but you read this and it's like, well, Kyrie obviously wrote this. So "we are truly at an inflection point in history where as a collective community, we can band together, unify all caps and move as one. We need all our people with us and we will stand together in solidarity. As an oppressed community, we are going on 500 plus years of being systematically targeted, used for our IP, intellectual property, talent, and also still being killed by the very people that are supposed to protect and serve us." I mean, what do you, okay, yeah, I'm with you, but what is it that you want? Like, what is it that you're trying to have happen here? Or do you just want a bunch of people to follow you and listen to your screeds?
Oh, that's what it is. It's the latter. Again, I think it's for clout, and he just wants to be looked at as a leader. And be looked at as the man. I don't think that he's doing it for any kind of altruistic reasons and for the betterment of mankind. It's just, look at me as the man. I'm the one who's in charge now. Like, are there little changes in things that you'd like to see different? Like, again, I'd listen to Avery Bradley, and I understand that, and you know, I'm all for that. But I just think, you know, Kyrie to me, I think just goes with the way that the wind blows. And for him saying the players should start their own league and the word salad that you got out of him, I think it's him trying to mirror the rising tide of a certain segment of the population who's used what's supposed to be a movement for good, and it is, and turn it into something else where they want to tear down the system and tear down capitalism. And it's no different to me than these people that are starting these little stupid pseudo cities in Seattle and Portland, Oregon. I think he looks at that
autonomous
like,
zones.
Yeah, like
Kyrie wants an NBA autonomous zone.
He does. He does. I really think that's what it is. And I think he's so whack. Yeah, he's so whack.
I think his heart's in the right place. And I don't, you know, I know we're kind of ripping on him here. I don't want to discount that too much because I do think his heart's in the right place. And I think these issues are important to him. And he's an African American male, so I think these issues affect him. But I agree with you on the word salad thing. And like I said, it's more, you know, I've said this before about Kyrie, and I'll say it again. Kyrie speaks about things. He speaks of things. He doesn't say anything most of the time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But more than anything else, and I said it last week, even if you're a Kyrie fan, regardless, you're injured. You're not going to take part in this. So I don't think you should have that much of a voice anyway. I know that you got voted into one of the leadership roles there, but if you're injured, it's moot. You're not going to play. So that's it. You know, I don't think you should.
Or you could say this, and I know he said he would give up everything to participate in, you know, social justice reform. And I admire it. And we've seen that. Maya Moore's done it in the WNBA. Renee Montgomery just left the Atlanta Dream. So if that's what you want to do, do it. I mean, I applaud you. And I think there's two ways of looking at this. You know, I like what Avery Bradley's doing, and I like the way he's gone about it, which is like a very sort of clear message in terms of here are the things we need to change. And Lou Williams has sort of had a similar thing. And I think guys are actually honestly having a debate. There's an earnest debate about whether it's better to play or not. Personally, and I'm not an NBA player, but I think it's better to play because I think you have a huge platform. I would say to some of these guys, how did this start? It was Colin Kaepernick at NFL games taking a knee during the anthem. So he was at a game. He was at an event, an NFL event. So that gives you a huge platform. But I know that there are some players that feel that it's going to detract and distract from the debate and discussion and the progress that's hopefully being made. I think that's an honest and earnest debate. And you can have that debate. But you also have to have some substance behind what you're saying. And with Kyrie, I don't see the substance. Maybe somebody else does. I don't see it. I don't know what he wants. I don't know what are you telling me you're going to give up your NBA career? I applaud you. Is that, you're saying you'll do it, but is that what you're saying?
No.
Are you saying all the players should give up their career? Are you saying you should start your own league? Are you saying no one should go to the bubble in Orlando because it's just this grand plan by the establishment to distract people from the movement? You're throwing all these different things at me, and I don't know what you're really trying to get me to focus on.
Tell you what, though, he strikes me as a guy, because people like that typically, I think, are also easily manipulated. Man, if I was like a shady businessman, I think that's one of those guys that could go to Kyrie and be like, okay, man, I got this plan. All I need is like 20 grand for this investment, and it's going to be this business that has to do with vegan meat and all this kind of thing. Like, yeah, I think that's a guy that you could easily dupe. Maybe that should be my next calling. Yeah, shady businessman. That's it. Coming up, our long commercial-free segment here. Chris has found yet another bad movie. That the world at large hates,
yes. And I will
but that
watch
he
this
loves.
Movie every time it's on, too.
We'll touch on that, along with your phone calls here at 617-779-0985. It's Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, good news. The patio's at one...
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Up.
So I've been peppering this in throughout the show today, started by mirroring something that Hardy was doing during his Hey, It's Hardy program, 9 o'clock here on 98.5 Sports Hub. His golf show program, post-game show, really, is what it is. And it really prevents all of us from having to hear the fellas here on the Sports Hub, which is a gift in of itself. But Hardy today was spending a lot of the 9 o'clock hour asking what movie do you love that other people hate. And mine was 2002 Death to Smoochie. That's number one on my list, starring Robin Williams and Ed Norton as Smoochie, the big goofy purple dinosaur. Very dark, dark, dark comedy. Can't recommend it enough. Gasper, ultimately you had, what was the one that you came to?
I came up with Eurotrip.
Eurotrip, which I have not seen and probably won't because it looks terrible. And you thought of another one, which I actually recently saw for the first time. Because it was being played on cable, and that would be...
Just Friends.
Just Friends. That is a bad movie.
I'm watching that if that's on.
Starring Ryan Reynolds, who grew up a fat, awkward teen, was in love with Amy Adams' character. Amy Smart, that's what it was. Amy Smart. I recognize a theme with these movies. A lot of Amy Smart in these movies, Chris.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
See, yeah. See why you're tuning in to these mid-2000s... rom-coms. It's about Amy Smart more than anything else. Yeah. Anna Faris as a Britney Spears type character, Chris Klein and others. This is not a good movie. Again, I just recently watched this for the first time. It being the pandemic, running out of stuff to do, it was on. I was like, I'll tune this in. Oh, it's not good. And the tomato meter backs that up as well. 42%, Chris. The audience kind of likes it, 71%, but usually I go by the critic scores, the uppity critics hate it like they did Death to Smoochie, that means it's bad. And Just Friends, that's a bad movie.
Are there any funny reviews?
Oh, yeah, let's see. That usually... no matter what filmmakers intend, fat suits always take over the movies they're in. Let's see. Despite a rich premise, Just Friends ultimately fails to live up to its early potential, settling into broad comedy that shortchanges the romantic possibilities. Some of these aren't really that funny. Romantic comedies are often held up as the epitome of Hollywood... I don't know what that word is. Dross? They are used to gauge how far the standards of comedy... Some of these are too uppity. Like, I can't... Yeah, it's just not that good of a movie.
Okay,
and
all
I wish the reviews were funnier. But that's another one, Chris. Add that to
the
pile.
I got two. Just Friends. I like that movie.
B-Rob, who's producing the show, Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, read his Celtics work there, said that our own Johnny Wallgame, John Wallach, checked in. Didn't want to be on, but he wanted to throw Rocky V. Rocky V, which is a bad movie.
Rocky V. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, he likes that movie.
That's with Tommy Morrison, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the street fight movie.
Yeah.
That movie's so bad. There are some movies that are so bad in chains of, basically franchises that I like that I've blocked them out. And Rocky V is one of those movies. Oh. I blocked out, one of the Transformers movies. It's it never happened.
Like Godfather 3. Like, you refuse. Well, you know what I really do this with is the Star Wars movies.
Okay.
These later ones.
Yeah.
And the prequels. Like, I those don't exist to me. Now, really? I've really whittled it down to this. There's four Star Wars movies.
Okay.
There's the three from when we grew up, and in order, it's Empire Strikes Back, Precipitous Drop-Off. Then, I would actually go Rogue One.
One was a good movie.
Rogue One's tremendous.
Yeah. I thought the Han Solo movie was good. People didn't like that. I thought that was good. That's my third movie that I thought was good.
No kidding, huh?
That movie was good to me.
Maybe I should kind of see that.
I don't know. I thought Solo was a good movie, and right. Donald Glover was great. In
good
that
actor.
Movie.
He's great. That dude's great.
As Lando.
And then I will go. Star Wars original, and then Return of the Jedi, and that's it. These later ones, I refuse to acknowledge, and those prequels. Oh my God. Oh Jesus, they were so bad.
I do like Natalie Portman, though.
Of course, yeah. It's always the draw. Is there a hut in it? Then Chris is going to give it a thumbs up. They, like, if you and I did Siskel and Ebert, starring a hut, thumbs up from Chris. Now, meanwhile, me over there trying to be well, I didn't really think the plot, and it was kind of thin. Chris, it had a hut in it. Thumbs up.
I like Natalie Portman. She went to Harvard.
I know. Yes. Yeah. No.
She speaks like five languages.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Damn. Smart and attractive. Thumbs up from Chris again. Brendan in New Hampshire wanted to weigh in on the Belichick discussion. Again, Chris has his column up on Bill Belichick. Where is he with any kind of a statement in regard to social reform here in the country? You've got them from all the coaches, save for Ron Renicki. But you've had statements put up by the Red Sox and Ron Renicki. Like, let's be honest, he's a stopgap anyway. But nothing from Belichick. So, Brendan in New Hampshire, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking the call. Murray, I got to tell you, I don't get to call in much. You're one of the most talented people on that station. I love what you do. It's hysterical.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
When it comes to Gaspar, I'll be honest with you. Hearing you talk, I did get my back up because I haven't had a chance to read the article, but you eloquently explained yourself on your stance on Bill Belichick. And that prompted me to call in. The basketball coach that made a comment about Kraft being hypocritical and liking Trump, explain to me why Robert Kraft can't have more than one cause that he finds important.
Sure.
Particularly when the president has done so much for people of Israel, which we know is important to Kraft, he might be able to agree on some things and disagree on others and still not be hypocritical. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. And also, I think we all have, they're personal friends. Robert Kraft and Donald Trump are friends, and they were friends before Donald Trump was ever the president. So you can have a friend that you don't agree with every political or social stance that they have. That can still be your friend.
Right. And so why is he getting called up for being hypocritical? I mean, Robert Kraft is a pretty generous guy, and he seems to be pretty – I don't know him at all other than what we see in the public.
Yeah.
He seems to be pretty generous to people of all race, colors, and religion. And to get called out by an old white guy – to say, hey, wait a minute, this is also important to Mr. Kraft, and he's allowed to have that thing important. It's like he seems a little out of line.
You're referring to Greg Popovich. Thanks for the call. Yeah, of the San Antonio Spurs, who it was just this week he was calling out Kraft and others for.
Yeah, I think he was basically calling out NFL owners overall. I think what he was saying is sort of, now the league, through Goodell, has turned around and said, we support the player protest. But I think Popovich's point was, well, how vocal were you? But Robert Kraft was very vocal when Donald Trump had the statement, basically deriding any of the players who were protesting and saying, those SOBs, should be off the field or an owner should do that. Robert Kraft came out very forcefully and said he didn't agree with that statement. I think Popovich's point was it's kind of hypocritical for the NFL to be like, we support the protest now. And then you have like nine owners or eight or nine owners who gave like $1 million to Trump. I think that was his point. But and just specifically with Robert Kraft, it's like that's a personal relationship he has, and it predates, politics or anything else there. And we all have friends where you don't agree on them. You don't agree with them on everything. I mean, that's sort of part of life. You can't just shut out all the people in the world that you don't agree with on every little thing. So I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, but it's also, we've now reached a point, too, where I wasn't surprised with what Popovich said. I don't agree with it, but
Popovich very outspoken.
Yeah, it's now, denounce the president or, we're done with you. There's certain people that feel that way. And I think, Popovich is certainly one of those people because of the way that this is all heading. Just as an aside, I just told this to Chris before we came back in the commercial break. I have to get it off my chest. There's few worse things that can happen to a person than too much mayonnaise. I had a leftover. I feel so horrible right now. I had a leftover sandwich from yesterday that I was like, I'll get to that tomorrow. That would be my plan during a commercial break. I'll have this sandwich. This is how I plan my days now. Just food and, getting up and coming in, doing the show, and that's it. Rinse and repeat over and over and over again.
They put like a half a jar of mayonnaise on that sandwich. It was a turkey and cheese wrap. I took two bites, and now I feel like I've eaten an entire jar of mayonnaise, and I just want to shower, and I need to drink all of the water. You can't, when you've had too much. Oh, it's, Chris, I'm dying over here. It's absolutely horrible. I can't get that taste out of my mouth. It's the egg, the oil. Now you're going to have to deal with this for the next hour, so good luck. Yeah. Give me the headlines. Let you know what's going on. The latest in the world of sports. Oh, there's so much sports going on. And then we'll get into the final hour of Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150. Win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline MA.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.